Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We are scheduled to be joined shortly by Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7. So we'll get to that coming up here in just a few minutes. So it looks like Tennessee and Vanderbilt, hopefully, will play at some point today. They got rained out yesterday. There is a game taking place at 9:30, and they are scheduled to take place 30 minutes after that. So it looks like Vanderbilt and Tennessee, hopefully, will be able to get back on the field today at the SEC tournament. Lots of rain taking place down there in Birmingham and the Hoover area as well. But, you know, we've talked about this. I don't think the tournament means a ton for Tennessee. Obviously, they're going to want to win. And, you know, Vince Ferrara was talking the other day on the DDC about if you've got the competitive makeup that Tennessee has, like those people that think that Tony Vitello is just going to, like, rest players out there and get ready for the regional. Probably not going to happen with Tony Vitello and this team, but I am interested to see after a pretty good response from Vanderbilt in the first round the other day, what it looks like when they head on the field. So let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7. Wes, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
I'm doing all right. Just checking the weather forecast every 5 minutes or so to see if we can get some baseball in today. But other than that, doing all right.
I'd say it's lots of weather watch down there in Alabama. So, Wes, let's start with this. Obviously, it's been an incredible season for Tennessee, and we'll see what they do here coming up in the SEC tournament. My question for you is, when regional play begins, what does the rotation look like for Tennessee? And most of the time when teams get asked that question, it's because they don't have enough guys. In Tennessee's case, it's probably because they have too many guys. What do you think the rotation looks like right now for Tony Vitello and company?
Well, I know he wants to get all four of those so-called aces. He wants them all in the rotation or all to pitch this week in Birmingham. If they're able to play four games, I think he would like to go Tidwell, then Dahlander, then Burns, then Beam in that order. And he'd like to play four games maybe where they all four could start one. But at the very least, he wants all four of them to pitch. So if it gets broken down into two or three games or whatever it ends up being, then at that point things could change a little bit. I would still think that Tidwell, the only guy who didn't start a game last weekend of those four, and as good as he looked out of the bullpen at the end, the plan has been to give him the ball to start this thing and then to go in some order to Dahlander and Burns and Beam. But we will see. There are other guys on this team, including, you know, Joyce and Sewell and Sechrist, who could all start. I mean, they've got, like you said, sort of a silly number of options, but I think the order I just mentioned is the one that Vitello would like to go with if they could get the games in.
Wes, I'm just wondering how much this particular tournament means to this team. I want to say it was Drew Gilbert, but I could be wrong there, saying during the last series, like, whether it means something or not, like, we love playing, you know, and obviously they do. They love playing, they love competing. But we know that nothing that happens here is going to change really their placement once the NCAA tournament starts. So what does it mean to them? And does playing Vanderbilt kind of give that a little extra juice, you know, the fact that they get a chance to beat them for a fourth time or prevent Vanderbilt from having any kind of, you know, anything that they can say back to them?
Yeah, Joe, I think it probably does. You know, I question motivation, too. I remember those Rod Delmonico teams that never really cared too much about this tournament unless they were on the bubble because they sort of knew. I mean, there were years where a couple times where they got to Omaha and they almost intentionally did nothing down here. So it is possible that you could do something like that. But I think this team just kind of likes to compete and win. There's just kind of how those guys are wired. And then, like you said, having it be Vanderbilt to start the thing for them, I think that probably does give it a little more juice. You know, I know that they might try to act like it doesn't, but I don't buy that for a second. I think if you put a team like Vanderbilt, you know, arguably their biggest rival, you put them in there to start the thing, a program like that, an in-state rival, I'm pretty sure that ruins the possibility that they would ever take this thing lightly. So the question is now sort of strategically, how do they want to plan it? You know, how much do they want to you know, get guys at bats versus how much they want to just go out there and roll with their A squad and play the game. I'd say it's probably like that, like the latter, but we'll see. Either way, I think putting Vanderbilt in their way first sort of guarantees that you're going to get them caring about this.
Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7 on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Wes, a whole lot is made at times about the ballpark that Tennessee plays in terms of their lineup and the home runs that they had. Now, we just saw them put up about 3 trillion runs against Mississippi State on the road a few days ago as well. So, I think we know at this point this team can hit anywhere. Let's say they do get to the College World Series, though. Are you concerned at all with this lineup about that ballpark in Omaha and how big it is?
No, I would be more concerned about just their mental state going into it, because last season they played so well to get there down the stretch, and then they didn't play well at all once they got there. They just had a first inning that didn't go their way, had a couple bad breaks, and then they just didn't really play very well. I think if you look just at the metrics, Robbie, I think a lot of their home runs are going 390, 420, 440. I mean, they're hitting balls that would get out of Yellowstone in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know that it will. I mean, it certainly will affect them because it affects everyone like that. But I think they do enough damage in the gaps. They're also one of the best teams in the country at getting doubles. Their batting average, slugging percentage, all those things are up. I think the way they're built, that would be okay. Plus their pitching, which they pitch in Lindsey Nelson for two-thirds of their games almost, and their pitching numbers are stupid in a park that just doesn't allow good pitching, really, by nature. So I think they'll probably be fine from a, sort of an X's and O's standpoint, if you want to say, for lack of a better phrase. I think that you just worry about, they've been chased all year long. They've kind of had that target on them, that pressure. Will that get to them? That, to me, is the bigger question I have.
Well, I agree. I do think, though, that I almost feel like, Wes, that's a bigger concern before Omaha. Massive, but they're going to be the favorite, period. All eyes on the Vols. They're going to be at home. So I feel like that's where, think about like the first game of the tournament last year, right? Things happen, but I feel like if they get to Omaha, then last year's experience, first of all, like you've still done something big, right? Like you've still achieved something significant by getting there. And then they have a lot of these guys have the experience from last year of not playing well. Now it's like they're familiar with it. I feel like if they get there, maybe the pressure releases a little bit and now the confidence gets rolling. But we're all speculating about Omaha and there's a lot of baseball to be played, I guess. Right.
No, yeah, I agree with that, Joe. I think that, you look at, just last year, that Mississippi State team had been to Omaha sort of 3 times in a row, and that third time weren't expected to win the thing, but a lot of the guys in the program had been through that. They'd gone through that. They'd taken the picture by the stadium or by the statue outside. They'd done all the, all the ESPN sort of interviews and things that you have to do before that starts. They'd done all the open stuff, the walking through the team hotels and everything. They'd done all that. They'd been there. They'd got the T-shirt. They were all right. And then that helped them a lot. I think Tennessee, if it can get there, maybe you hope that some of that rubs off, because there is, a lot of good veteran leadership on this team. So I think that part probably helps. But, yeah, the pressure on them, I expected it to get to them during the regular season at times. It never really did. I think Kentucky that weekend, it was just raining. It was miserable. And they just didn't play their best. But in terms of the other series, they've sort of been okay from that standpoint. So, but, yeah, you go in there, you're 2 games away from your season ending all the time. So at least. So that does put pressure on you. If you trip up there in the regional, you trip up in game 1 of the Supers, all of a sudden that pressure maybe starts to build a little bit more. And like, I think you're right, Joe. That would be a time where you worry about, are they looking too far ahead, or are they getting nervous, or what happens? Because they've been ahead so much this year that when they get behind, you think, is that going to bother them?
Wes, last thing for you here. You've been around Tennessee fans for a long time. Obviously, there's a lot of good that comes with that. There's some bad that comes with that as well. How would you describe how this fan base views and feels about Tony Vitello at this point, based on what he's been able to build here with this program?
Yeah, Robbie, kind of reminds me of Bruce Pearl early in his tenure. You know, people were just all in to the point of, like, delirium. I mean, you know, Vitello's a guy, and a lot of his players are guys that if they're wearing your uniform, by God, you love them. And if not, by God, you hate them. And they love this guy. They love this guy. They love his team. They love the competitive fight that this team has. They love the fact that this team will go through and kind of have its little, you could argue, Mickey Mouse stuff, whatever you want to say. But they back it up, right? They win. They win a lot. You know, they've won 3 years in a row, including the COVID year where they were like, what, 21-2 or whatever it was when that season got canceled. They've just been doing nothing but winning for like 3 years now. So they kind of got a nice little culture thing going there. And this fan base, people who didn't care much about baseball before or were on the fence about it, they are all on board now. You know, Tony Vitello is as popular as any person in the city of Knoxville right now. Could probably win mayor in a landslide. So I think that there's a lot behind this team. Just getting in, I mean, they've played games against like Butler midweek where you were still having to pay a ton of money just to get in the park because at 4,500, it's not big enough. So they sold out pretty much every game all year long, even in February and March when it was cold. So, yeah, they're all in. I expect to see a bunch of them down here. We'll see if the weather impacts all that. But I expect them to, you know, if they get to Omaha, there should be a bunch of them there. These guys are behind this team. I mean, they've been on the road traveling with this team a little bit. You can see a sea change kind of happening right now.
Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Wes, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to join us, and hopefully the weather cooperates with you today.
Yeah, hopefully I don't need a boat to get over to the Met and see in a little bit. So hopefully this works out.
That's right. Wes, appreciate you, man.
Anytime, guys.
Absolutely. We'll come back. We'll react to what Wes had to say there. Take your thoughts on Tennessee and Vanderbilt baseball. Everything on the table, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Attention, men. Have you been struggling with erectile dysfunction? Well, Hillside Medical Clinic has a breakthrough treatment for ED that does not require any pills, injections, or surgery. And right now, Andrew joins me from Hillside Medical Clinic to tell us all about it. Andrew, what's going on?
Well, that's right, guys. This is helping so many couples all over the country. If you're struggling with erectile dysfunction, if you're frustrated, maybe it's not going so well in the bedroom, you're sick of the pills, Hillside Medical has a major medical breakthrough called wave therapy. It's a technology that delivers pressure waves. The pressure waves repair, open up, even regrow blood vessels in this part of the body. That means more blood flow in the bedroom, where you want it, when you want it, without the use of medication.
So, Andrew, what kinds of clinical studies have been done on this technology?
Well, it's pretty impressive. We have 60 third-party studies from 5 countries now, everybody from Cambridge to even a humorous article from Men's Health magazine. They sent one of their writers in. He took the treatments and he wrote, "What happened?" This is so cool. The science is sound, and it's working for so many.
And, Andrew, you've got a special offer if our listeners call in right now.
We certainly do. If you're ready to put a stop to that ED, if you're ready to regain your love life, grab your phone. Give us a call now. This is all free. Leave your wallet at home. The exam, the assessment, even the ultrasound, plus this gift, this is worth the trip. It produces immediate results in the bedroom, totally free to callers right now.
You heard it, guys. Put a stop to your erectile dysfunction by treating the root cause of the problem. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now to qualify for that offer at 615-576-5000. That's 615-576-5000. Put a stop to your ED and regain your love life. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now at 615-576-5000. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. Thanks to Wes Rucker from Go Balls 24/7 for joining us in the last segment. We'll be joined by Ben Arthur from the Tennessean coming up at 9 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans. So, Joe, hopefully at some point today, Tennessee and Vanderbilt are able to play baseball. They are scheduled to take place after the first game of the day, which I believe is Florida and A&M, scheduled to take place at 9:30. Now, there is still some weather going on down there in Birmingham and in Hoover, so we'll see what happens on that front. But hopefully at some point, Tennessee and Vanderbilt on the field today. Obviously, this is, Wes called it Tennessee's biggest rivalry. I think I would agree with that. It's become quite the rivalry in this state in terms of the fan bases going back and forth to each other. Like, if Vandy could get a win against Tennessee today, I think that could spice things up a little bit. Now, Tennessee has basically nothing to play for in this tournament other than just the satisfaction of winning the SEC tournament. But if Vanderbilt could get out there and get them today, it would be a little spicy between these fan bases. And if Tennessee wins, that's just going to be all the more the annoyance from Vanderbilt as they head into postseason play coming up later in the next week.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess if you're a Tennessee baseball fan, you probably would just rather just avoid this. Like, why give them another chance? This season, which has a chance to be, discussed among the great college baseball seasons. Also, I think has a chance to be discussed among the favorite Tennessee sports teams. I'm waiting for Vols fans who are like, no, I just care about football. I'm not into this team. I can't find them either. So this season that has all that going for it, right now you got a sweep of Vanderbilt too. Go down the list of all the things you did. You went in to Hawkins Field and just bombed them three straight games. So it's like, no need for this game. For the Vanderbilt fan and for Vanderbilt, I'm talking more fans, I guess. I mean, obviously both teams, I'm sure, relish playing this game, right? Why wouldn't they? I mean, this is an in-state rivalry, and it's two great programs. It's old money. It's Ted Knight and Caddyshack, and it's new money, Rodney Dangerfield coming out from the East, in those awesome pants, jamming Journey on his golf bag. But from the fan perspective, Vanderbilt, I would imagine this would be, you'd love to just have any kind of part in giving them any kind of misery. And, one baseball game. I mean, anything happened in one freaking baseball game.
Yeah, no question about it. The biggest strength for Tennessee, and, the lineup is great. We know that. A lot of people have, even on our text line, have brought up the concern about what happens when you go to Omaha. As Wes pointed out, it's not like Tennessee is just a home run hitting team. And by the way, some of the home runs they're hitting are just being absolutely demolished with the baseball. So they're going out of Omaha too. But batting average-wise, hitting doubles, as Wes pointed out, it's a really good hitting baseball team. But the biggest strength to me is what we talked about and Vitello's trying to get kind of nailed down this week, the rotation. I mean, I know you've got a couple of freshmen in there, and you wonder how they hold up as they get into a long season and certainly in pressure situations that they've just not experienced before when it comes to postseason baseball. So I think that's a concern as you move forward here. But just arm talent-wise, they've got a rotation that goes four or five deep in terms of quality starters. And that's a strength this year. I mean, that's a strength in college baseball when you start to get into your regionals and your super regionals. And certainly when the College World Series comes around, if you go four or five deep with starters that you feel pretty good about to give you quality starts, that's a gigantic weapon in postseason baseball.
Oh, no question. I mean, and again, that's just the most surprising part of this team. Figured Blade Tidwell would be good. I mean, you told me going into the year that like Blade Tidwell is going to miss a significant amount of time because of an injury. I'd be like, oh, man. They could be in a little bit of trouble. Now, maybe their offense will keep them afloat, but instead, it really is. I mean, it's crazy how good their pitching has been. And you get, you got a transfer here who comes in and it works out as well as possible. And, you got a kid who, like, there's hopes that maybe he had an injury in high school. There's hopes that maybe, that he can, be some kind of contributor. Turns out to just be an absolute dominant starter. you know, and so a lot of things just kind of came together. But I don't think you can look at this and just say they just came together. I mean, I've heard Tony Vitale say this multiple occasions. You know, I think that the secret weapon, or the, you know, maybe the unsung hero, doesn't get talked about enough. And I know, because I've tried, he won't do media interviews, so like you don't see as much about him. But Frank Anderson,
yeah,
the pitching coach, who, you know, I mean, just look at his picture. I mean, the guy actually looks like J.J. Watt's glaring, like, you know, like middle school, like, I'm mad that my mommy made me wear a collared shirt today picture. Just fierce, man. Frank Anderson, that guy is obviously really good. You know, he was, I mean, he was at Houston. He's kind of, you know, he hasn't had like this hugely, you know, high profile career, but I mean, he's at Oklahoma State. Now, Oklahoma State, obviously, that's a legit dominant program.
Yep.
And so he's been, like, you know, he's been a very successful, you know, coach, but on the pitching coach front here since then, since 2012, you know, that's a huge hire for Vitello, and it just has to have a lot to do with this. At the same time, you know, coaches don't create major league pitchers, you know, they can help develop them. And the fact is, the Vols have several guys on this staff who are going to be, significant draft picks and prospects, and I'm sure some of them are probably going to be successful at the highest level.
I mean, Ben Joyce, if he keeps going at this rate, he's going to end up reaching 110 miles an hour at some point.
Well, I mean, he's throwing 100 with ridiculous, like, break on the ball, too. Yeah. I mean, like, it's like, man.
They did, like, a pitch track of, I guess, his two-seamer running in. It moves a lot. And you're talking about, first of all, I don't even know how you catch it, so much less hitting it, like the catcher that knows it's coming. It's got to be hard to catch.
That's a good point. Yeah. No, I mean, a couple of those are like, how in the heck do you even do that? And he's not even – I don't even understand. He's still got developing to do or whatever, but shouldn't he be, like, higher on draft boards than he is? I don't get that, man. But, I mean, what a weapon, you know, middle reliever.
Keith 105. Just casual 105. Keith on the text line says, only show in Nashville that we use a random Caddyshack reference when talking about baseball. This is coming from Keith.
We're the only show in Nashville that's going to be honest and tell you that Tony Vitello is a modern-day Rodney Dangerfield, okay?
That's right. Coming up next, we'll get back into the Titans. We'll take your thoughts at 615-737-1025. How much of a step back should be expected for the Titans this year? We'll get into that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Well, I mean, it's professional football, and our job with 90 players or 91 or whatever we're going to end up with, you know, is to try to create competition at each position, because that's gonna make everybody better. And I try to tell them the ones that deserve to be here, they'll be here. And there's no set number of position players like, oh, we're going to keep this many defensive linemen or this many. If you deserve and you've earned the right to be here, John and I have to find a way to keep you here.
That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel earlier this week at OTAs discussing the state of his roster. It'll be interesting to see some of these position battles. Maybe the most interesting preseason around here in a long time with some of the rookies that are coming in. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I got some tickets to give away to see Kenny Chesney coming up on Saturday at Nissan Stadium. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 at 615-737-1025 will win a pair of tickets to see Kenny Chesney coming up at Nissan Stadium this Saturday. Looking forward to that. Joe, we'll see if I make it out there for that. I can throw some beach balls around.
Yeah, so why is that the brand, by the way?
I don't know. I've been to one Kenny Chesney concert ever in my life, and beach balls were going around. So this very well could be a one-time thing. I don't know if this happens all over the place, but it happened when I was there.
Kenny's great.
Okay.
I would love to go.
Yeah. Go East Tennessee, boy. Kenny Chesney. So we brought this up earlier. There's a piece on NFL.com by Greg Rosenthal, basically looking at the AFC South and saying that it's the Colts division to win. The Titans are going to take a step back this year. And, you know, Rosenthal doesn't go into too much detail about the playoff teams in the AFC. We'll see more of those predictions coming up in August and in early September. But my guess is, Joe, that you're right about what you said earlier in the show. I think there will be more people that pick the Denver Broncos to make the playoffs this year than will pick the Tennessee Titans to make the playoffs this year based on the addition of Russell Wilson. And, you know, that's a tough division. Unfortunately for the Titans, you have to play every single team in that division this year in the AFC West, so we'll see how they handle that. But my question for you is, as you look at this Titans team, I think you and I, to some degree, both expect a regression, a step back. They were 12-5 last year and won the AFC with the number one team in the AFC heading into the playoffs. So a step back to some degree is probably natural, and we'll see what that means for the playoffs when that time comes around. But how much of a step back do you believe we could see for the Titans this year? And do you think that missing the playoffs altogether is a legitimate possibility, a legitimate point of conversation, barring obviously a ton of injuries that we can't foresee right now?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it's absolutely a legitimate conversation. Look, in the Titans last year, it's such a wild year, right? But they get the number one seed. They lost some games that were not befitting of a playoff team. They won some games that earned them the number one seed because no one expected them to win the games. But point being, you know, the NFL season is unpredictable anyway. And I think the Titans in particular, have obviously been consistently able to rise up and play great in big games. The last playoff game notwithstanding, actually the last two playoff games, which is disappointing and a little bit concerning. But, you know, since Vrabel's been here, how many games that not just national media, but even local media fans were just like, ah, this is not going to go well.
Oh yeah.
And they flipped it around. That said, you know, look at this. Look at the conference. I mean, it's tough. It's a much tougher conference than the other one. You know, it's way better than the AFC. I mean, I think the Broncos thing, that's going to be really interesting. We got to keep track of that in the preseason. You know, even if it's like, or at least like at the Athletic, we all do picks or whatever, or you know, ESPN, whoever, and try to tally it up to how many people or do more people pick the Broncos. Because the Broncos are in a ridiculous division. The Raiders are better. The Chargers could be really good. The Chiefs, I think, actually are dragged down with Tyreek Hill leaving, but they're still really good. So there's four. The Colts right now are my favorite to win the AFC South. You can argue with that. I know on the text line today, people have said, ah, come on, Matt Ryan, that's a step back from Carson Wentz. Maybe. I mean, I saw some analysis yesterday, Matt Ryan, the ball's on time and accurate. I don't know. But I think he's more reliable.
I don't care what Colts reporters say about Matt Ryan and the ball being on time and accurate. Colts reporters were all over Carson Wentz last year. I could not care less about what they say about Matt Ryan in May.
That's fair. That's fair. But let's go, you know, do we think the Ravens are going to miss the playoffs again? I don't know. I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson and that whole situation, but certainly with him at quarterback for most of the year, yep, that's a playoff contender. The Bengals just went to the Super Bowl. I'm not even going to mention the Steelers. The Dolphins, I don't know what to expect from them, but they've got some guys. The Patriots are the Patriots. They're going to be solid, and the Bills, to me, are the best team in the NFL. So, I mean, in the AFC, there are, okay, Texans, Jaguars, Jets. A lot of people would also say Dolphins, but I'm going to say there's three teams that I absolutely do not expect to sniff the playoffs. And other than that, it's ridiculous. I mean, honestly, if they could do a reorg of the NFL for a couple of years, this would be the time to do it. I mean, the AFC compared to the NFC, it's actually, I can't remember one conference being on paper going into a season this much better than the other.
Well, depending on – I totally agree with everything you just said. Depending on what happens with Deshaun Watson, I'm interested to see, you know, how that factors in Cleveland as well. But, I mean, they could absolutely be a playoff team if he's going to play most of the year.
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, now granted, I mean, if it's – I mean, there's some not great stuff coming out from some of the depositions, you know, with him. I mean, I think a lot of people have kind of been along the mindset of six games for him. Is that enough to, well, then it's like, oh, well, they got to back up Baker Mayfield, throw him in there.
Hey, he didn't show up to OTAs.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? Shocking development there. but seriously, so, you know, Baker, I mean, I expect to not be part of the equation at all. So six game, who else is on that roster, by the way? I have no idea. Like, who's the actual backup for Deshaun Watson going to be this year?
I think it's Josh Dobbs.
Oh, yeah, Dobbs went to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Okay. Or Jacoby Brissett?
Oh, yeah, Jacoby Brissett's there, too. So that's who it would be. So Dobbs is the third guy.
You're just going to disrespect the VFL like that, huh?
I'm okay with it.
I'm not convinced of that. I'm not convinced. Josh Dobbs still young, man. But either way, okay. So you've got, yeah, Brissett could probably game manage you to, you know, a couple wins out of the six games if it's six.
Especially when you got Clowney coming off the edge.
That's right. That's right. I mean, with that, really, you've got just about all you need, you know. But seriously, if you go 2-4 in those six games, I mean, as much as it will gall a lot of people, including myself, to see Deshaun Watson dominate the NFL after all this stuff, or be one of the top 3-4 quarterbacks in the NFL after all this stuff, do we think it's not possible? I think it's possible.
Yeah. So I think Titans-wise, like, I look at the roster, and we talked about this earlier. I think the defense, you know, last year was kind of a slow build with the defense. You came out, they got torched against Arizona, even though they were on the field the whole game because the offense couldn't do anything in that game. You got torched against Seattle. Like, it was a building process last year for the defense to eventually get to the point where they were the strength of your team heading into the playoffs. I expect with the defense they got coming in this year, like, I expect them to carry them for the first part of the season, and then we'll see what happens with the offense and if they can figure it out. But, like, I don't anticipate some slow build for the defense this year. Now, what does that mean in terms of their bottom line? I don't know. I mean, you've got the Giants to open up with, and then you go right to Buffalo. So I think the defense can play really well against Buffalo, and Buffalo could still score 28 points in that game. So some of this is going to depend on the schedule as well, but, you know, I think the Titans are a playoff team. I think they're still good enough to be a playoff team, and that is me fully under the assumption that the defense is going to be good and that Derrick Henry is going to look like Derrick Henry. Now, if Derrick Henry doesn't look like Derrick Henry, then maybe we're starting to get into a different discussion there.
Oh, a very different discussion. Very different. You know, to that point real fast, you know, we had a caller earlier who appreciate the call. Maybe a little down on J-Rob.
Maybe a little bit.
Given what he's achieved. What do you think about, you know, Deontay Foreman didn't sign for a ton of money. I don't have it in front of me, but it wasn't a big deal. What do you think about moving on from him and going to Haskins, you know, someone who you don't know, cheaper, rookie, younger, all that. But given that you got that performance from Foreman, what do you think about that move? That made him mad, and I've seen that from a lot of fans.
Well, look, there's the known commodity of what Deontay Foreman is, which I still think to some degree is overstated at times. I think people think he's like the second coming of Walter Payton, and he's not. But, you know, he's a good player, and I'm glad that he latched on around the league. Honestly, I'm totally fine moving on to Haskins. If Derrick Henry's going to be healthy, Deontay Foreman's not getting that many carries anyway. Like, I'm totally fine going with Haskins. I watched Haskins a lot in college. I think he's a really good player. So I'm fine with them going the way they did with Foreman now that they've gotten a running back in the fourth round. Now, if he turns into Darrington Evans and can't get on the field, then that's going to be a problem. But you can't know that right now if you're John Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, Foreman go a year for $2 million with the Panthers. And good for him. I mean, remember, folks, he was out of the league. Yeah. Which I don't totally get, but he was.
Well, I guess the question is, like, if you're a Titans fan, would you have rather them brought back Deontay Foreman, or would you rather them bring back Dontrell Hilliard? Because, like, Hilliard's going to have a role on this team. He's going to be their third down back, I would assume. Like, if you brought Foreman back, that's not really his role. So then you would have had to go draft one of those. So are you happier getting Haskins in the draft where they got him and the role that he's going to be in? Or would you rather them have kept Foreman and then go draft a third down back? I don't know. Right. I guess people would have different answers to that.
Yeah, and that's a great way to put it. And if I had to choose personally between those two guys, I'm going with Hilliard because now you do have a guy who can do all that stuff, and he's a little bit more of a home run threat. With so 1 year, $2 million for Foreman. Haskins, it's a 4 year, $4.8 million deal. You know, but the guaranteed money is $690,000. I mean, you save yourself some money. You may have set yourself up for a good player for a few years if he's what you think he is. So, I think I'm good with that.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. ESPN 1025 and 1063, The Game is your racing station. Tune in this Sunday to 1025, 1063 for a racing doubleheader starting at 10 a.m. with the Indy 500, followed by the NASCAR's Coca-Cola 600 at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. Also, join Chase McCabe every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock for Chasing Checkers as he talks to the drivers and gets you set for the race weekend. The Memorial Day weekend racing doubleheader on 1025 The Game is presented by Nashville Super Speedway, Nashville Fairground Speedway, and European Collision Repair. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 1025, 1063 The Game. We'll be joined by Ben Arthur from the Tennessee and come up at 9 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans. Let's take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Indy Ben, texting in, says, the defense should still be top 10 this year, but I expect the offense to look pretty rough, especially early in the season, with questions surrounding the O-line, wide receiver core, and the potential decline of Henry. I have the Titans going 9-8 this upcoming season. This is coming from Indy Ben on the text line.
Shocked, Indy Ben. I'm shocked that you're down on the Titans and you're up on the Colts. Tell me some more, Indy Ben. No, I'm just messing with you, Indy Ben. We had an interesting point about, you know, the whole idea of like the window with the Titans, which I think is, you know, and Ron brings up an interesting point here. Good morning, guys. If last year was a go-for-it season, which certainly it was, that's me talking, not Ron, back to Ron, then why wouldn't this year be a go-for-it season? So we lost AJ Boo-hoo. Who are you? Are you Stillman? Is this Stillman's burner? We should still be in the window to win it all. So my response to that is, well, I agree the Titans are in certainly a window of being a playoff caliber team. If you're a playoff caliber team, then you got a chance. And also, if the Titans do happen to have the best or close to the best defense in the NFL, that still matters.
It does.
Stopping people still matters. Like I go crazy when people talk about NBA players and never consider whether they can guard anyone, even though it's half the game. Like there's no sport where it's devalued more than basketball, but even in the NFL, with it's high scoring, it's passing offenses, the rules favor the offense. Go back through the playoffs, go back through Super Bowl winners. You know, good defense still plays. So from that perspective, the Titans are right there. But my point is, trading AJ, that's not a go-for-it move. Now, if you believe that there was no alternative, they had to do it. I know a lot of people have talked themselves into that. Okay. It's still not a go-for-it outcome, right? But there are several boxes that if they are checked on offense, then Indy Ben's going to be wrong. And people who see this team taking a big step back are going to be wrong. So that there's still the possibility. It's not like there's no hope. It's just when you have to have A, B, C, D, and E to go your way on one side of the ball or the other, then that's asking a lot. And it's not realistic to expect all of them to go your way.
Doesn't this feel like a situation where Vrabel thrives, though? Like I was thinking about this earlier. I mean, he's – you know, we know you brought that four-game stretch last year. They got a similar one on paper this year that they're going to have to deal with. I think in November is when it starts with, you know, the Packers and the Bengals and the Chiefs all thrown in there together. But, you know, if expectations are not as high this year, and I think it's fair to say, like regardless of what happens from here on out for the rest of this offseason, expectations outwardly are not going to be as high for this Titans team as they were last year. I think that's pretty safe to say at this point. In that kind of a situation where you feel like Vrabel and this team thrive a little bit in terms of when expectations are down, they rise up?
Yeah, but he won the number one seed when expectations were up, you know?
True.
But of course, within that, we talked about this earlier in the show, within that of expectations being up, then they went way down during the season when you lose Derrick Henry and when it's clear your offensive line is struggling and your quarterback's not playing as well, I mean, the expectations went down within the season. But yeah, I think Vrabel relishes this. And if you're Vrabel, one thing you can tell your team is, well, all these geniuses a year ago were saying, golly, are the Titans going to hold anyone under 40 points? Their defense is so bad and they should change the coordinator and they can't rush the passer and they're the worst third down defense ever. And look what we did on defense. Well, by golly, fellas, that's exactly how we'd say it too. By golly, gee whiz.
Oh, yeah.
Gee willikers, we're going to do the same thing on offense this year. No bleeps needed.
Austin from Clarksville on the text line says, how much do you think Kelly will contribute to the offense? Talking about Tim Kelly, passing game coordinator.
That's a good question. I think you got to be careful with these stand on the sideline, you know, watch a half hour, an hour of something and try to take hard conclusions away. But I think his role is not exactly the same as Jim Schwartz a year ago. I think all this stuff about Jim Schwartz coming in and he's downshifting a little bit, you know, he's in a certain time of life, he wants to be involved, but he's not looking to like take someone's coordinator job or anything like that. I think that was all true. I think Jim Schwartz was a good advisor for them and a voice in the room. But I see Kelly, to me, it looks like he's more front end involved in practice. Now, again, that's one of those things where I'd like to see if others in the media realm would agree with that. But it looks that way to me already. How much impact will they have? I don't know. But it's kind of tricky, too, you know, things like this. If he is more involved, you know, for Shane Bowen, now he knew he was under fire and all that stuff. But the bottom line is Vrabel gave him the title, said, you're the DC, go. And he did it, and he did the job. And Shane Bowen, by the way, if this defense this year is as good as we think it is, be ready for Shane Bowen head coaching rumors and interviews because it's coming. And again, that's a guy who a year ago, how many people wanted him sent packing? You know, it's a good thing to remember. But I feel like if it is different with Tim Kelly, and if it's what it looks like to me, like more of a collaboration, that's challenging too. Like if you're Todd Downing, you have this second chance now to prove to people that the whole thing that happened with the Raiders was, it wasn't you. It was, I mean, you know, it wasn't just you. It was because a lot of people want to put it on the OC. Oh yeah, he sucks. You know, he was a terrible OC. He shouldn't be OC again. So he had this opportunity with this loaded offense last year to prove otherwise. And then it doesn't go as well as hoped. I think some of that's on him, but now it's like, and they brought in this guy and you're collaborating with them. I mean, this is going to be definitely a case study in, you know, subverting egos and collaborating. But I think when you have a guy like Kelly who's had success and has fresh eyes, that should benefit your offense.
Got a text that says Matt Ryan is an upgrade over Carson Wentz, but Ryan and newly signed backup Nick Foles are complete statues back there. Zero running threat. They have Taylor as running back, so it may not matter that much, but that could limit Indianapolis's offense. I mean, you know, I don't know if you necessarily have to have your quarterback back there running around. It helps when they can extend plays. But the first part of that text is interesting to me because I think most people feel that way, that Matt Ryan is a clear upgrade over Carson Wentz. And my question is, like, is he really? Like, I understand his, when you compare careers, it's not close. Matt Ryan is a borderline Hall of Famer with the career that he's put together. And Carson Wentz has not been and will not approach being a Hall of Fame football player. But, like, right now, at this stage of his career, what is Matt Ryan? He threw for 20 touchdowns and 12 interceptions last year. That's fewer touchdowns and five more picks than Carson Wentz threw for last year. Now, I understand he played for the Atlanta Falcons. Their offensive line wasn't good. You know, he had the Calvin Ridley situation going on. There wasn't a whole lot of targets to throw the ball to. I understand all that. But I think people are just assuming that Matt Ryan, with a change of scenery, is just going to come in here and light it up with the Colts. And I just don't know that I believe that based on this stage of his career.
Well, I think that's as big a question as when you talk about who do you favor, Titans or Colts. Again, I would give the Colts the edge because I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be pretty good, but I think you're dead on. It's hard to assess him. He's played like that team's been so bad in the last few years. And when I've watched them and I've tried not to, cause they've been so bad, but when I've watched them, including in person, when the Titans went in there and, you know, right at the end of Mariota's run when they won. I haven't been all that impressed. I think he has diminished. I think he is more his age than some other quarterbacks who are around that age. But we'll see. I also think you can be rejuvenated going to a place like this, having a chance to actually win. And it's got to be great for him to have that offensive line and that running game and that defense. I mean, sure, there's a lot more support around him now. He doesn't have to be a big playmaker. He has to be a really good game manager. So I don't know. I don't know what to expect. If it's better than pretty good, well, then I think the Colts should be talked about as one of those teams too. And then we can start talking again, finally, about Chris Ballard being a genius.
Coming up next,
we'll be talked about enough.
That's right. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Ben Arthur from the Tennessee, and we'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.